The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
I'm sure he'll go back to pushing the lie again. And ending on a serious note here, he's already seemingly laying the groundwork this time around as well. Not suggesting that he will lose, but saying that if he does lose, well, it had to have been rigged. It had to have been stolen from me. Something's wrong with it, which could, again, fuel doubts in his supporters' mind and many officials fear violence again.
Hopefully the difference now is the country is prepared for that. We couldn't have really imagined a president not conceding the election and leading a group of his supporters to the Capitol in an attempted insurrection.
Yeah. Breaking news. The Biden administration taking a series of actions to target what they allege are attempts by Russian-backed actors to manipulate public opinion here in the U.S. ahead of the presidential election, according to two senior U.S. officials.
This is being described by our sources as a whole-of-government action designed to target Russian propaganda and disinformation aimed at interfering in the 2024 election. It is said to include sanctions by the Treasury Department, law enforcement action by the Justice Department, and one of the focuses is on RT, formerly known as Russia Today. But this does appear to represent an escalation in the efforts to try to purge the system of Russian propaganda and disinformation widely. So it remains to be seen what impact this Russian disinformation is having. But nonetheless, this is a stance by the Biden administration to say, if you're violating U.S. laws and policies, we're going to come after you.
Laying the groundwork for all of the fighting and the contention that there will surely be following the election on November 5th. Isn't it interesting that for Donald Trump to question the integrity of an election, he's fueling doubt when he says that. And then here you have these breaking reports today from MSNBC, from CNN. Joe Obama's government, they're going to go after Russia because Russia's been, I mean, it's a sustained effort to interfere in the 2024 election. And of course, it's to help Donald Trump win. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show. You can get to the live video stream of this program at TrumpetDaily.com and at the Rumble channel, Rumble.com/TrumpetDaily. Lots to get to on today's show. Hopefully we can plug in the Key of David program. I keep talking about it. It got a lot of feedback, a lot of people calling in to request the book, America Under Attack, the one that we promote as often as possible on this show. So hopefully today or tomorrow we'll be able to plug that in. But lots of news to get to first. I mean, basically, voting starts this week. Early voting begins in some states in just 2 or 3 days. So the election, as I said yesterday, we're 9 weeks away. But the election basically is starting. These next few weeks are going to be pretty intense with reports like that. It's going to be nonstop. The fighting, the lawfare that's revving up from both sides. This is from the Washington Examiner. North Carolina residents will start receiving voting materials for the 2024 election this week, with absentee ballots beginning to hit mailboxes on September 6. It says, but a few legal challenges regarding the Tar Heel state's voter registration and ID laws could prove to have a significant impact on whether the state swings red or blue in November. So these legal challenges, and it gets down to registration and ID. You would think this is not anything that could be controversial, but it is. Because Democrats want everyone to vote. Illegals, dead people even. No voter ID. You don't need to show up and show your ID for anything. Just submit your ballot. And everything's good. It talks about how close the race was in North Carolina back in 2020 and also 2016, President Trump winning by a razor-thin margin in both cases. But it says here, the thin margin by which the state has was decided in 2020 makes the legal challenges in the state, including a nearly six-year-old lawsuit filed by the NAACP protesting North Carolina's voter ID law. They can't, I mean, minorities can't be expected to go get an ID, to have an ID that you have to have when you fly, when you go into a bar, when you show up at a game sometimes. It's crazy. They'll fight any way they can to make sure that they can harvest those ballots on through. I think it was the Italian premier that said yesterday, if it's not for cheating, I mean, there wouldn't be communists ruling these many Western nations, or at least at the very top of the parties, controlling a lot of government all over the world. And how do they stay in power when they get in and they have such miserable policies? We're experiencing a bit of bitter affliction ourselves here in the United States. They get in, and then, as my father has written, they'll do everything they can to maintain their grip on power, even if it means cheating, even if it's lawfare, even if it's meant to incarcerate your political opponent, or even assassinate him. We've got an update on that, by the way, following on yesterday's show. Josh Hawley making the rounds last night, talking about how most of those people guarding President Trump on July 13th, they weren't even Secret Service, they were DHS. And they had gone through a webinar training series for a couple hours. That's it. How is this not an inside job? Just think this through for a moment. All that happened on that day. And then the media just kind of dusting off and carrying on. And they don't even talk about it. They don't even care. And there's like two or three in Congress that are hearing all of this feedback, getting these reports from whistleblowers. But you wouldn't know it unless you tune into a program on Fox News, maybe. That's about it. Another lawsuit filed by the Republican National Committee and the state Republican Party seeks to purge more than 200,000 voters from voter rolls ahead of the election, citing a failure from the state elections board to require identification to prove citizenship. Here again, something you would think it shouldn't be controversial at all. They haven't proved they're citizens. We can't just have ballots floating around. That's how you cheat. That's how you get away with rigging elections. And so the battle begins as early voting starts this week. They're battling away in court. Both sides have lawyered up. Both sides. We'll see how much smarter the Republicans are this time around, that so many of them tried to sound the alarm in 2020, but these Democrats presiding over these dark blue districts just brazenly pushed them out or put barriers up over windows so that you couldn't see in. I mean, it was just done in the plain of day. People witnessing the cheating. And the corrupt regime media continuing with their spin on Trump's big lie. Like he's getting ready again to cast doubt on the election. Meanwhile, in other news, the Russians are interfering in this election. These people look at themselves in the mirror. So much cognitive dissonance. So many different standards for different parties. America really is. I mean, if this was the last best hope, look at where we are. $10 billion going into this election campaign. $10 billion. You know, there's a section in the World Tomorrow booklet, Mr. Armstrong's beautiful vision of tomorrow, where he talks about how political campaigns are going to be a thing of the past. There's God's going to appoint leaders in the wonderful world tomorrow. And we're not going to have campaign seasons going on for years in some cases, with mudslinging coming back and forth from both sides. There's that beautiful book right there. If you haven't requested that one yet, make sure you call our operators today, the 800 number. You can see it there, 1-866-930-3023. 24. This one's from the American Thinker on Kamala Harris. She's pulling a Hillary Clinton. She's going around and changing her accent depending upon how she thinks the audience talks. I mean, the fakery is on every level. This woman is fake in every way. It says here, Kamala Harris has often been criticized for the rote quality of her speeches on the stump. She's actually made herself a figure of fun for giving the exact same speech in each city she visits, going word for word. But while her words are the same, Harris does change one thing: the regional accent she uses to deliver them in, according to how she thinks the audience speaks. It says in Detroit, she spoke with this brand new accent. Yeah, she sounded like she was a deep in the South Southerner while speaking up in Detroit. Fox News called it her foghorn leghorn accent after the giant white rooster figure with the overbearing Southern accent in children's Saturday morning cartoons. It stands in striking contrast to the woiking stiff accent she put on for a Pittsburgh audience. Well, what is going on here? Why do they do this? Why do they pander? Why are they so openly fake? Well, I guess they think it gets them votes. Peter Ducey, he confronted KJP on this just yesterday. Listen to clip 8.
Since when does the vice president have what sounds like a Southern accent?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Well,
I mean, this is...
She was talking about unions in Detroit using one tone of voice.
Is this something that
same
you think...
Same line...
Okay, Peter.
That this... She used the same line in Pittsburgh, and it sounded like she at least had some kind of a Southern drawl.
Do you hear the question that you're... I mean, do you think Americans seriously think that this is an important question? They care... You know what they care about? They care about the economy. They care about lowering costs. They care about health care. That's what Americans care about.
So
that's what they want to hear.
This is something.
They care about, your colleague just asked me about democracy. Well, basically, we talked about, went back and forth about democracy and freedom. That's what they care about. I'm not even going to entertain some question about the press. It's just hearing it sounds so ridiculous.
Well, but hearing it is.
The question, I'm talking about the questions, is just insane.
Is that how she talks in meetings?
Peter, we're moving on. We're still moving on.
Yeah, imagine if that was Trump. They wouldn't be moving on. Is that a good question, by the way? Is that how she talks in meetings? I mean, does she come across kind of fake in that environment or forum as well? What if Donald Trump slipped into a Southern accent or something just off the wall? Do you think she'd say, let's just move on? The American people aren't concerned about this. They pick apart every little thing he does. Everything. This little picture that's gone around, I just saw it on social media earlier. Tim Walz's family. They've got T-shirts that say Walz is for Trump. And there's like 7, 8 of them in the picture. And evidently it's legit. The picture. Evidently, there's a lot of people in Tim Walz's family who are MAGA. I mean, just think about that for a moment. It's not like they're even moving on from this, KJP and others. They don't even consider it. They don't even bring it up. Consider Donald Trump. Who is it? His niece, I think it is, who's always making the rounds in the regime media because she's a Trump, but she hates Donald Trump. Look what they do with RFK. His whole family, his physical family, has disowned him. And they've got all of his relatives. As soon as he goes and endorses Trump, you've got to get the RFK relatives on TV. And you've got to ask them, why is your brother so crazy? And yet in this case, there are a lot of family members. And by the way, a lot of his National Guard members as well are those that served with him. That don't seem to like the guy. You would think that that would generate, if they're going to sit down, if he's got to go along on the interview to babysit Kamala, you would think Dana Bash would at least say, you know, tell me about your family, because it seems like a lot of them are voting Trump. Do you get along with your family? I mean, it seems like it would be an interesting question to throw in there. But no, they just move right on. Everything's carefully set up for the Democrats in power, because that's what Dana Bash is. She's a Democrat. Same with Jake Tapper. They're all Democrats. They're all part of the regime. They're all spreaders of propaganda. And so it's completely normal for Kamala to break into her Southern accent. It's just something that they do. And audiences love it, I guess. So much phony fakery. And coming back to Tim Walz, I think it was in this clip where he talked about how he's just an ordinary guy. He's poor. I mean, he's just like anyone in America, in the heartland, who might be struggling economically. Play clip 10.
I saw last week the Wall Street Journal was trying to say, because they did a story, that apparently I am the poorest person to ever run for vice president. But then they did another story that said, oh, he's actually richer than his statement says, because he has, and I quote, like this is an evil thing, a defined benefit pension plan. That is my wish for every American, to have a defined benefit pension plan.
The bounce never did happen following the convention. And so they're on to the next. There's stories now saying don't believe the polls that say Trump is still leading. By the way, the Russians, they're going to try to undermine this. And then, of course, they're working quietly behind the scenes to see if they can pull off another steal. The NAACP going to court, trying to remove voter ID requirements. Of course, they've got to try to steal it. And Trump, for his part, is out there saying we've just got to try to make it too big of a win for them to be able to pull off the steal. There's a lot to suggest that this is not going to end well. I guess we'll find out following November 5th just how quickly violence is going to spill into the streets. We know it's coming. It's prophesied. But God's bringing Jeroboam back. And my father has indicated that there will be at least a little bit of a respite from all the mayhem and the bitter affliction. We don't know how long. We don't know all the specifics of the prophecies as they unfold. But we know enough to know that he's coming back. This was, we'll have to pull the footage maybe for tomorrow's program. I mentioned this trumpet yesterday on the show. And we just noticed on Right Side Broadcasting, I think it is, the online TV channel, there was someone who went to a Trump rally in Pennsylvania that was holding this up during an interview and evidently was holding it up during the rally as well. I mean, that's an attention-grabbing headline. Why is God protecting this man? This is making the rounds. America Under Attack has done the same thing. As I say, maybe we can bring you more of that tomorrow. This from Michael Schellenberger. We played some clips from him. He had some comments on Brazil banning X. And a lot of talking heads on the conservative side are saying, I mean, if Brazil can get away with this, a nationwide ban, there's more than 200 million people in Brazil. And as I said earlier this week, I mean, the CIA, they meddle in elections abroad and at home, we now know too. But they do a lot of things. There's a lot of nefarious activity that's going on. Brought to you by the CIA all over the world and in a lot of nations that most people don't pay attention to. But listen to this from Schellenberger. It says, in the spring of 2022, so just a couple years ago, the Biden administration's Department of Homeland Security, the same agency, by the way, responsible for protecting Donald Trump on July 13th, announced a disinformation governance board. 1 week prior, former President Barack Obama advocated for sweeping U.S. government censorship of social media platforms in a major speech at Stanford University. They're behind closed doors. They're applauding what Brazil is doing. I mean, there's some of them. I think Keith Ellison in Minnesota, who's openly applauding it. They make no bones about it. They are for censorship. Obama, the dear leader, he loves him some censorship, especially when you've got Elon Musk at the helm. He must be silenced. It says here, Obama, well, he refers to the speech at Stanford. We've played clips from that speech previously on this show. It says, Obama's speech gave a clear picture of the censorship a Harris-Walz administration may impose. He claimed that social media platforms tend not to want to do anything, and a regulatory structure, a smart one, needs to be in place for slowing the spread of harmful content. You know, as long as they can control what they see as harmful, they're fine with censorship. They're trying to blot out the truth, as we know. Obama stressed that government regulation has to be part of the answer. In his speech, Obama praised the aggressive social censorship that the European Union is currently pursuing through its Digital Services Act. So they're excited about Brazil cracking down on free speech. For decades, the Democrats were the party of free speech in the United States. What changed? How did Harris, Walz, Obama, and dozens of Democratic senators and members of Congress come to support Brazil-style censorship? How did this happen? Well, it's all part of the fundamental transformation. The communist infiltration of the United States is real. It is real. Listen to this from Dave Rubin, clip one.
Regardless of the illegal treatment of Starlink and freezing our assets, we are complying with the order to block access to X in Brazil. We continue to pursue all legal avenues, as are others who agree that the justice's recent order violates the Brazilian constitution. Dave, a lot of people see this as a government trying to crack down on free speech. How do you see it?
Oh, well, that's exactly what it is. And I'll even be a little more alarming on this Tuesday morning and say that this could really be a precursor to what happens here in the United States if we get another Democrat administration. They've made it clear that in the past they work with big tech companies to silence us. We have all the evidence of that, and they've basically admitted it already. But Elon Musk is at the front line. He is now the pinpoint guy at the front line in the war on free speech and fighting Brazil. And fighting all, it's not just Brazil that he's fighting. He is fighting giant conglomerates of these ad companies that are working together to boycott him. He's really fighting everybody. And for a guy that could really spend the rest of his life just going to Mars or just never being heard from again and living a life that you right. and I could only dream of, you got to give him a lot of credit here. By the way, I should add that Rumble, a company that I have a little something to do with, right. has done the same thing in Brazil. We're no longer in Brazil either because there are ways to fight big governments. And I think if you stand up for your principles, more and more people will come your way.
He makes a good point about Musk. I mean, he like Trump. I mean, he could just walk away. Why face all this persecution, these lawsuits coming at you from Europe or wherever else? It makes you appreciate the courageous standing up for the Constitution, the First Amendment. Listen to Jonathan Turley's take, clip two.
You know, you have in Europe threats against Musk for arrest. They've already arrested another CEO of a platform. But it's really Brazil that I think many in the anti-free speech movement are watching carefully. If Brazil can succeed in banning Twitter from the entire country, it will be replicated. Because many hold the view of what you just heard from Vice President Harris. They view speech as a privilege. It's like a driver's license that they think that can be rescinded if you're reckless. And this is the ultimate destination for this movement, where if they can't convince people to give up their own freedoms to embrace censorship, they're going to start to take sites offline to prevent people from hearing opposing views.
Communist infiltration is real. It's not just limited to the United States. We're certainly seeing it today. In fact, there's a clip later. I think this might be 16. It was on that last list, Sam, but play 16.
I want to want to get your take on the broader foreign policy out of this administration and why there have been so many missteps. You know, what is their thinking in terms of foreign policy? And does that continue should Kamala Harris win this election? I mean, look at the approach to communist China. We now learn that a former top aide, the deputy chief of staff to New York governors Kathy Hochul and Andrew Cuomo, has been arrested and charged with being an acting agent of the Chinese government. She's 41-year-old Linda Sun, accused of using her high rank to serve the Chinese Communist Party. In exchange for millions of dollars and gifts, her husband was also arrested. The accused worked in state government for 15 years. She allegedly blocked Taiwanese leaders from accessing the governor, provided unauthorized invitations to Chinese leaders for travel to the U.S., and sought to shape the state's messaging on China's.
No wonder they lowered the boom on New Yorkers during COVID. I mean, you had some communists right there in government, working in state government for Cuomo and Hochul. Yeah, well, wasn't it Pelosi who also had a spy as a driver for her? Why do we see this popping up? Eric Swalwell sleeping with the enemy, literally. And then the Biden crime family just lining their pockets with tens of millions of dollars from CCP companies. And we could go on, couldn't we? Fauci and friends helping them create a bioweapon, helping them create the COVID virus, engineered by our good scientists. Science falsely so-called, as Paul called them. They have infiltrated the United States of America. The communist infiltration of America was prophesied. That's the title of the chapter in our brochure, He Was Right. Play the next one on that playlist, I guess 17.
But I'd like to know why the Chinese Communist Party has been so effective at getting inside the gates of America and so effective at getting close to leading Democrats. I mean, look at Eric Swalwell. Look at Dianne Feinstein. Yeah. She had a Chinese spy, right, you know, driving her car for 20 years. Eric Swalwell was helped by a Chinese spy win local elections. What's going on?
Maria, it is, among other things, the new Democrat Party's flaunting with the globalists, and they don't see a problem with China. That's the other side of the equation, that the Democrat Party doesn't see a problem with totalitarian regimes in government. You got Bernie Sanders, who honeymooned in Russia, and I'm talking the USSR, right? And now you've got Tim Walz, who's taken, I don't know, dozens of trips, taken his class to dozens of trips in China, and extols the virtues of China. These folks don't get it, that these people that they're nuzzling up to are our enemies. So imagine how shocked they are when our enemy is right inside the gates.
Why do they love the communist Chinese government so much? Well, the answer is because they're communists themselves. They love the crackdown on free speech in Brazil. Tim Walz loves the CCP. He's been over there 30-some times. He mentioned Bernie Sanders there on his honeymoon. They love it. They love authoritarianism. They love control. They love having the power. Play one final clip from the same program, clip 18.
For 4 years, beginning in 2016, the Democrats were screaming, Russia, Russia, Russia. Trump colluded with Russia, right, Russia, Russia. And yet, throughout the entire process, instead of focusing on the lie that Hillary Clinton made up about Donald Trump, they should have been looking at our number one adversary. And they should have been stopping the number one adversary, that is communist China, from getting inside the gates of America.
So clear now, so easy to see. And a lot of commentators, Maria is one of the better ones, but a lot of them have noted what's happening, what is happening, what has happened. But Herbert Armstrong, he was talking about this back when it just seemed preposterous. There's no way this could be happening. He was writing about it back in the 1940s and 50s even. If you don't have that booklet, He Was Right. Make sure you call our operators today, the 800 number, 1-866-930-3024. All right, I think we have enough time left to play the Key of David from this past weekend. It got a huge response, lots of requests, thousands of requests for America Under Attack. And if they have it queued up in the control room, we can just roll right into it. If not, we'll take a short break and come back and finish today's show and with the Key of David and letting that be our Bible study. You're listening to Stephen Flurry, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
Daily news, Bible prophecy. See the connection on the Trumpet Daily. Are you feeling overwhelmed by the flood of news and information? You need something to sift the news and bring you only what matters most. You need the Trumpet Daily. You also need something to help you understand not just what's happening now, but what will happen next. You need the Trumpet Daily. Only the Trumpet Daily accurately matches daily news to precise Bible prophecies. Because Bible prophecy is the only tool up to the task of sifting the news down to what's important and showing you what will happen next. Join host Stephen Flurry every weekday. Go to trumpetdaily.com. America is under attack from within. Anyone paying attention can see this. But only one man, one book, and one work of God warned over a decade ago about the dark spiritual dimension of this attack. Prove that the vicious attack on America's founding principles was prophesied in your Bible. Next, on The Key of David with Gerald Flurry.
Greetings, everyone. I recently offered a new book, America Under Attack, and now about 2 months later, God has revealed that this book was prophesied in your Bible. Now, that's a dynamically new truth that God has given us, and a wonderful understanding more deeply of these prophecies that He has given us and these wonderful truths. And the more we have this understanding, the more we love God's work and are just excited about it and love God for making all of this wonderful truth available to us. Notice this thrilling new prophecy about America under attack, about that book. Over in Ezekiel 2 and verse 9, it says, "And when I looked, and behold, an hand was sent unto me, a hand to take this roll of a book that is called here. This new book is hardback. This is a roll of a book, but it doesn't say the little book, which is what I in the past thought it meant. And there's a reason why it's closely related to the little book. But it is a book of lamentations and mourning and woe." Lamentations and mourning and woe. There's some bad news in it, as well as some very good news if we look far enough into it. So God says here, "Go speak to the house of Israel," not to the church of God, which we thought in the past, that was a little book. But here it says, if we look at the context closely, it's to the house of Israel. This is about the nations of Israel and not about a church. It's something different than what we thought and what we think now. The context really does reveal a lot, and we need to keep that in mind. But just think about this book. God is aiming at the nations. It's for this world, but for three nations in particular. A warning to them because of their problems and difficulties with God. But it's not for the church as I thought in the past. Notice Ezekiel 3 and verse 1, and I'll read this one as well. This is a part of the new revelation. Here's what it says. Moreover, he said unto me, Son of man, eat that you find. And now this is like the little book, but still we're not into a little book. Eat this roll. And it's about nations, nations. It's a huge prophecy. And God even prophesies this very book in his Bible prophecy. One third of your Bible is prophecy. But it's about the house of Israel, or three nations in particular. You can read about that in our book on the United States and Britain in prophecy. What a powerful book that is, and what all it explains to you. If you haven't requested it, please do so, because all of our literature is free. It costs you nothing. The little book, I'll talk to you just briefly about that. I was wrong about what I thought was the little book. It's not the little book, but it does what the little book does when you put all these things together. Revelation 10 and verse 8, it says, And the voice which I heard from heaven spoke unto me again and said, Go and take the little book. We have a booklet on the little book telling you exactly what that little book is. And we'll send that to you if you request it. Verse 9 says, And I went unto the angel and said unto him, Give me the little book. Take and eat it up, and it shall make your belly bitter, but it shall be in your mouth sweet as honey. There's something really sweet about this. If you look at it deeply and ask God for his understanding, it is sweet. Sweet as honey. And this, certainly this new revelation is. Then it, verse 10, it says, And I took the little book out of the angel's hand and ate it up. This was from God and brought by an angel. And so this little book is actually mentioned in this prophecy I'm talking about, but it's only a small part of the main subject. And I'll show you that as we go along. But if you look at the new throne of David, there is something here. I'd like to go back and give you a little history of what's happening in God's work and in God's church and in three nations of Israel in particular. Notice 2 Kings 14 and verse 26. 2 Kings, that's one of the former prophets. 90% of that prophecy is for this end time. For all of the prophecy, it's for this end time. So we need to understand this, that this is a prophecy, and here's what we're dealing with, and this is why you need to understand it to tie it into what we're talking about today. But here's verse 26, For the Eternal saw the affliction of Israel, very bitter, for there was not any shut up, nor any left, nor any helper for Israel. There was no helper for them. They didn't have any help. Terrible things were happening in Israel, in one nation in particular, the superpower of Israel, America. Well, it's not showing a lot of that superpower today, and there's a reason why. So the Farrar Fenton translates it this way, For the ever-living pitied the immeasurable miseries of Israel, both without and within, and there was no ease for Israel from without and from within. And what is happening within is even more devastating. That we need to understand as well. Then verse 27, And the Eternal said not that he would blot out the name of Israel from under heaven. Under heaven, all of those who've lived on this earth, but he saved them at this end time. He saved them by the hand of Jeroboam, the son of Joash. Now, this Jeroboam is a type, an end time type of the Jeroboam that we know so much about and read so much about in the Bible anciently. But there is a modern day Jeroboam, and he's going to save Israel and give them a chance to
avert all of these terrible problems that they have. So God can warn them one last time, and that's what he certainly wants to do. If you look at Daniel 8, verses 9 through 12, it talks about an Antiochus, and that is dual. And you can read verses 9 through 12, and they're just casting truth to the ground. And it's both in God's church and in these nations of Israel, especially three of them. And God is very angry and has a lot of wrath because of that. But do we understand that, and do we really fear God? This is something we need to understand. Let's look at verse 27. And here's what Jeroboam will do. And the Eternal said not that he would blot out the name of Israel from under heaven, but he saved them by the hand of Jeroboam, the son of Joash. He saved them by a man, used a man to save them. And that's happening right before your eyes. Again, you see, God says, I'm not going to let anybody blot out the name of Israel. This is his master plan for this whole world, everybody, not just Israel, but everybody's going to become a part of Israel. That's the plan. But anyhow, verse 28 says, now the rest of the acts of Jeroboam and all that he did and his might, how he warred, and he recovered Damascus and Hamath. Now, that's just a type of what's happening in this end time. And something Jeroboam is saving, and he's not saving Damascus, but he is saving something. And what is it? Well, it has to do with politics and elections. So if you will give you a transcript of what I'm covering today, and it will explain all of that to you, or much of it. But anciently there was something saved, and there's going to be something saved in this end time. Notice Ezekiel 2 and verse 1. So you have to keep your mind on the story flow here in Ezekiel, because the context reveals that prophecy that I'm talking to you about today. You can really understand it by just carefully reading the context and see exactly what it says. So here's verse 1, and he said unto me, Son of man, one man here, stand upon your feet, and I will speak unto you. So God is speaking to them, and it goes on to say, it is the children of Israel. Nations of Israel. That's what that means in the Hebrew, and it will tell you that if you study into it. And we have it all given to you there. We'll have a booklet on this in a couple of months. But right now, I wanted to talk to you about it because it is exciting to see God give you something like America under attack and then show you that it's actually prophesied. It's so important that he wants everybody to understand it if they are willing to do so. They will be saved temporarily and longer if they look to God and hear his warning. So he says in verse 3, and he said unto me, Son of man, I sent you to children of Israel, to a rebellious nations, it should read. To rebellious nations. It's more than one nation. Israel's more than one nation. And prophetic Israel today is just two nations. And there's a third one brought into it, the two birthright nations and the scepter nation. That's explained in several of our books that you can get, and you can find out all about it if you don't know what I'm exactly talking about. But he says it's a rebellious house, and there's an Antiochus, like it talks about in Daniel 8, verses 9 through 12, and that's dual there for spiritual and political. And they're casting truth to the ground. Two Antiochuses there. They're prophesied, and there was one anciently that did that very same thing. Going on to verse 6, it says, And you, son of man. Be not afraid of them, neither be afraid of their words, though briars and thorns be with you, and you that do dwell among scorpions. Be not afraid of their words, nor be dismayed at their looks, though they be a rebellious house. You see, we have to understand that getting God's truth out sometimes is not received well. And there will be some scorpions stinging you from time to time because they don't want to hear about God's prophecy. But they should, because it's about God just pouring out blessings upon them time after time after time. Verse 7 says, "And you, one man here, shall speak my words unto them, whether they will hear or whether they will refuse, for they are most rebellious." Most rebellious. That sounds like the little book. Now, the little book was a warning and about an Antiochus in God's own church. And here, God is talking about an Antiochus being in God's own nation of America. Now, you have to look into this and study it a little, but Antiochus is not a good guy, but he is. God says there will be such a man, and he will do a lot of damage inside of Israel. Three nations, even. You can look at that and understand that very much from this transcript you'll be able to receive. So we know that people don't really understand this, but they should and they could. And we're talking about mountain-sized problems. If you look in just America and Britain, in the Jewish state, you're going to see a lot of problems and a lot of division. See, nations that are divided can't stand, God says. They're going to fall if they don't get out of that, because they tear each other apart and the whole nation apart. But God says He's giving us a chance to do that right now. He really is, and you can prove that from your Bible as well. Rebellious nations, it says, that's what it reads in Hebrew. Verse 8, it says, "But you, son of man, hear what I say unto you. Be not you rebellious like that rebellious house. Open your mouth and eat that I give you." God says, now you go and you deliver this message for God. And if you don't, He says, their blood's going to be on your head. Going to be on your head. God gives you the job and tells you very blatantly what to do with it. And that's a wonderful thing, because God loves His people and He wants them to hear this message and He wants them to repent, so all of these problems will not come to fruition. They will not. The Farrar Fenton says of verse 8, "You, however, son of Adam, listen to what I say to you. Be not rebellious like the rebellious family." If you don't do this, their blood is on your head. That is what it says right there in verse 8 and verse 9. It talks about a roll of a book, but it doesn't say the little book. It's a roll of a book. It's a different book. Well, you could say one is a booklet and one is a book, I suppose. God says, now I want you to go to Israel. And as I said before, if you look at the context, this is aiming at nations. It's aiming at nations. It's a book for nations, three in particular. And you can see that in the book, America Under Attack. It tells you all about that. 95% of God's own people fell away. The little book warned them about why that happened and how it happened. So God always warns us and gives us a chance to repent so He doesn't have to bring the terrible problems on us without helping us. He wants us to turn to Him So you have to really look at this story flow here, and there is a story flow, a continuity. If you'll just follow it, it will tell you exactly what's happening. Verse 1 of chapter 3, it says, "Moreover, he said unto me, Son of man, eat that you find, eat this roll, and go speak unto the house of Israel." There it is again, the house of Israel. These are three nations, the two birthright nations and the scepter nation that God is most wrathful about. And here I wrote in the book, but it's in a book, God would say little book, I think, if it's a little book here, but it is a book. And it's like the little book because its purpose is the same, exposing Satan the devil and his Antiochus. And that's the context here in all of this. One's call it a roll book, other translations, a roll of a book, but it's a book. That's what it means, and it means a book. But here, you see, this is about going to the nations. That's the main subject here, not the little book. It's talked about here too, but only slightly compared to the America Under Attack book. Verse 2. So I opened my mouth, and he caused me to eat that roll. And he said unto me, Son of man, cause your belly to eat, and fill your bowels with this roll that I give you. And that's exactly what it says about the little book, but this is talking about another book. Then verse 11, we'll go down there where it says, go get you to them of the captivity, into the children of your people, and speak unto them, and tell them, thus says the eternal God, whether they hear or whether they will forbear. If you look at this anciently, Ezekiel was there with the Jewish people who were in captivity with him. And he was not a watchman, he was a prophet. But that's only a type of what happens to God's church in this end time. A prophet told them what was going to happen and what is happening. Where it talks about children in verse 11, it actually means sons. These are sons of God he's talking about. People that are converted and know God's truth, and then they reject it. And they reject God and do the most horrible things you've ever heard about. Just horrifying events unfold. Then you can go on to verse 12 and verse 14. The main issue is that America under attack is this way. It does to the superpower, America, what the little book or Malachi's message does for God's true church. They both do a similar work, little book to the church and America under attack to three nations in particular. And certainly to America, the superpower that leads the way. Then verse 16, it talks about the end of 7 days. There are 7 days or 7 years where we only reached out to the church. And then after that, we went on to a watchman work. That's, you see, again, that's reaching out to three nations and the whole world even. All of them. That's what this is about. A watchman really helps us to see that's another work. That's where America under attack comes in. See, God wants us to reach out to nations and tell them what they're doing that's wrong and how he will save them if they will heed his warning. He's going to hold all of us accountable for this. The Laodiceans are in captivity, and that means they're in some real trouble. I think that'll just about cover it as well as I can with this amount of time. Until next week, this is Gerald Fordery. Goodbye.